you know, visibly own it, because they own it now without knowing it. They are the important consumer group. They've got the nation by the economic balls, but they have to be made to understand what a responsibility that is. Directly and indirectly, they control the output of all major manufacturers. Cars are designed so that the young man in the family will suggest to the old man in the family, quote, "That's a spiffy model, Dad," unquote. And it also works so the father says, quote, "That's a hot little number. Makes me feel like I got some of my youth back," unquote. The older people identify with youth, and the younger people are responsible for a lot of the attempts at taste-making. Of course, up to this point, most of the major manufacturers haven't the faintest idea of what the kids really want or where they're at. A few of them manage to succeed in giving the kids something that is really up-to-date youth appeal merchandise. So Bowert says for the EVO, East Village Other, "What are you thinking of?" Zapp says, "A few clothing manufacturers. The record business tries to keep up. Doesn't make it most of the time. I'd say they're about a year behind, but almost everything also is based on what some young executive, which means about a 30-year-old cat who probably did a lot of balling in college and all the rest of the guys in the factory look up to him. He says, quote, I know what those kids want. Look how youthful I am," unquote. He beats his chest, says Zappa, and exerts his influence there at the place. He says, quote, "I know these kids. They want something snappy. Here," unquote. Sketches it out. The guy sketches it out at the board meeting, and they all say, sure, youth approach. That's what's happening. Pop art. Yeah, yeah," unquote. So they make some pajamas with Campbell's soup cans all over them and sell a lot of them. Yes, sir. That's the way it's been up till now. If the kids would get themselves together and take stock, get an orderly program, they could take over the country and run it. Personally, right now, I would hate to see them running it. Okay, now he says this. Personally, right now, I would hate to see them running it because they're not ready to run anything. They can't even run back and forth to the bathroom without tripping on the wallpaper the way they are now. I would say that in the elections of 1972, it's possible that a candidate like Frank Zappa, as Frank's thinking, it's possible that a candidate who would be neither Republican nor Democrat and youth-oriented could get it. It's possible that an 8-year-old vote could be lobbied in that time, and we could have an 18-year-old president. I know a lot of people would be afraid of an 18-year-old president, but I'm afraid of the ones that are over 30. So Bowert says, "What's your viewpoint on peaceniks and Johnson and South Vietnam and Paul Krasner?" And Frank says, "I don't know who Paul Krasner is." And Walter's shocked. "What?" And Frank says, "Who's Paul Krasner?" Walter says, "He edits The Realist." And Frank Zappa says, "I never read The Realist. Peaceniks, bullshit. Demonstrations of that sort don't do anything. They're not effective. People have a misguided conception of what is effective politically. I can't believe those people really believe that marching around with a sign saying peace. I would say, quote, sure, if you just keep on marching around with your sign and it's going to happen," unquote. That's really dumb. I was uptown Christmas Eve and got caught in the middle of a Vietnam peace march. And here are these people, man, just walking along the street, and it's cold, and they're carrying shopping bags with, quote, "Stop the War," unquote. Then there's this one woman out there with her shopping bag and a mess of leaflets singing, quote, "Stop the War in Vietnam, bring the troops home. Stop the War in Vietnam, bring the troops home," unquote. All the way down the street until she was hoarse. For nothing. Maybe in their minds they think, quote, "Listen, somebody in town, some important person in town is going to see us marching. And he's going to say, quote, the public is upset about the war in Vietnam," unquote. And he's going to tell one of his influential friends, and that guy is going to go to Washington, and they're going to hear about it, and they're going to stop the war, unquote. That's possibly what's going on in these protesters' heads. But that's a terrible fantasy. The war should be stopped. It's a war of greed. They all are, I guess. Even the Crusades, but that's not the way to do it. Bowert says, "What's the way to do it?" Zappa says, "It's only going to be stopped by the president. If you want somebody who's going to run the country the way you want it to be run, and if you're a peacenik and you want something done about it, I mean peace, get somebody in there who's going to be effective. Get somebody into Congress that's going to do the job. Those assholes, man, they've got no idea about who or what is behind their government. For the most part, the people that you can turn to and say, quote, yeah, he's in the government, unquote, really aren't doing anything because the power is really in the hands of a few. And a lot of them are outside of the government because the government is like partly controlled by the military and partly controlled by big business. So that would be your state socialists, the military, and your corporate socialists, big business, in Beter's terms. The power structure is very similar to South American governments where the leaders are protected from the people by the military. leaders are protected from the people by the military. Where would the presidency be without the SS men around, or Secret Service men, or Nazi men, I don't know which. Without the CIA, what are we? I think it's time that most of the kids found out that they are part of a nation that was built on a giant lie. And because they live here, they have to bear the stigma of all the bullshit of their ancestors, man. They came to a land and just raped it. They ruined this whole fucking country. In the beginning, the original settlers here were assholes. They take a bunch of people out of debtors' prisons in England. The original Americans, Plymouth Rock, Shazam, they arrive over here, you know, the ones that lived through the ship ride, terrible middle of winter on the Atlantic. They probably lived because they ate the bodies of the ones that died. You got a bunch of religious maniacs that land here who are afraid to fuck. And they set up an industrial society. And here you've got a bunch of groovy Indians who are already happening on a spiritual level and own the fucking country. And you get these creeps, you know, who come over here and claim the land in the name of Jesus Christ and the cross and the rock and the buckles in their hats and get a turkey and write all that shit down so the kids can identify with it. And here we go, we got a nation. From the beginning, it's all wrong. It's been carefully smoothed over. They keep putting Vaseline on it every year. They say, quote, well, George Washington didn't really cut down a cherry tree. And he didn't really tell his father, I cannot lie. He didn't really do that. It was only kind of like that. Pretty soon we're going to find out that he was a sodomist and all the real facts about the guy. The actual case histories of Lincoln and all the rest of the heroes, you know. But maybe they won't. Then he says, I think the kids are in a very ambivalent situation right now. They actually control the country from the economic point of view. But they're the ones who must be the target for the hatred of everybody else in the world towards this country because of the greed that's been exhibited by the people that have been taking care of things before. Their own mothers and fathers, man. And in a way, to get the whole revolutionary job done, they're going to have to disown their parents. They're going to have to take an honest look at what mommy and daddy really are, which is going to be rough for most of them. I mean, it's one thing to say, quote, I hate my mother, I hate my father, he won't give me the keys to the car, the son of a bitch, unquote. But it's something else to look at him and see that he's a coward. And he's an alcoholic. And if he's not an alcoholic, he's taking pills of some sort. And he's a liar, and so is your mother. And they're all just rotten, man. And they have bad taste. They select the ugliest drapes and furniture in the world, you know. They're shitty. Try and get a nation of teenagers to really see mommy and daddy that way. That's a little bit of a job, but it can be done. Now, the question is, once they perceive mommy and daddy in the proper perspective, what do they do about it? Let them replace it with the truth. You don't want to give them a mommy-daddy surrogate or any of that other kind of bullshit. Let them replace it with self-confidence. Let them fill the gap themselves. They should all do a mass penance, man, for the sins of their parents. And then big letters, because my folks were so rotten, I'm really going to be pure. That's a quote. Because my folks were so rotten, I'm really going to be pure, unquote. They really ought to do that. They ought to really get out and be real people. What a fantasy that is. Bowert says, do you think there's any kind of psychotherapy that helps you to be a real person? Frank says, yes, indeed, the mothers. There you have it, the therapeutic part. How about psychiatrists? Zappa says, those rotten motherfuckers, those assholes, those idiots, those cowards. Man, that's your mother and father with a different uniform on. Those poor people that are deluding themselves. And then he puts a mocking tone on and he goes, I'm going to see this analyst. Or I'm going to this analyst. And it's very hip here in the village. Quote, I got me this analyst. He don't charge much. Listen, he can really help you out. Look, he told me all about why I can't come, unquote. Meanwhile, the psychiatrist himself is so aberrated he can't stand it. Did you ever try to listen to everybody's problems for so many hours a day and try and come out unscathed? That's like working in a TB ward with no mask on, man. Those guys got to be the sickest people in the world. There's no way they can avoid that if they hear all those cases every day. That's got to be the most depressing, dot, dot, dot. How about Zen and yoga? Bowert says, how about Zen and yoga? Zappa says, I was interested in Zen for a long time. That's what got me away from being a Catholic, fortunately. But it's my observation that Eastern religions are wonderful if you're living anywhere but the United States. The best they can do for you here is give you a certain feeling of calm if you can practice meditation and absence by yourself away from everything else that's happening. The real goal of Eastern religion, with mystical experience and all of that, those aims are difficult, if not impossible, to achieve in an industrial society. And I think that most of the people who claim to have made the Tory someplace in the States today, really got to be pulling your leg. And I think that that sort of enlightenment bears very little relationship to the amount of chants that you can sing. People tend to today anyway equate that with all-knowing sort of intellect, which don't happen. It's a great tragedy that the underground doesn't really exist, because if it did, man, it sure would be a scary thing. Most of the people that are supposedly a part of the underground now are now very cowardly and dumb. Read that again. Most of the people that are supposedly a part of the underground now are very cowardly and dumb. So Bowers says, you mean they're just in it because they can't make it elsewhere? Zappa says, they're in it because they didn't want to do something else. So what's he talking about? The military? So he's talking about the military. Most of the people that are supposedly a part of the underground now are very cowardly and dumb. You mean, says Walter, they're just in it because they can't make it elsewhere? They're in it because they didn't want to do something else. They're too lazy to do anything else. Quote, hey, I found a way of life where I can be a vegetable man. I found a way of life where I can be a vegetable man, and nobody's going to say anything to me. Quick, give me another hit on that, unquote. And if anybody bugs you, you just tell them, quote, what man? I'm an individualist, and this is the way I do it, unquote. I found very few of the people that I've met in this supposed underground who are really willing to work for anything. I don't mean a 9-to-5 job, keep yourself alive, but to work for any cause, real or imagined. It's also superficial, man. Assholes. If the kids that think they're in the underground could match even 5% of the dedication that you see in the camp of the enemy, you've got to, like these people that are running the war machine are really dedicated to it, man. You've got to be into that to do it so good. You've got to be into that to do it so good. Those people are very sick that are running that machine, but they're very dedicated. And the ones that are running Madison Avenue are just the same way, because they got something to believe in, man. They got money to believe in. And the kids that are in the supposed underground don't have anything to believe in. And most of them that are tripping out on their shoelaces and the wallpaper and cosmic consciousness and everything else don't even really believe that's happening, because they're still wondering whether or not that's a fantasy, or is this a fantasy? Or is that a fantasy over there? They're not sure. They're all twisted around. But those guys out there, they know where it's at. Quote, I got a dollar, and if I can do this, and if I do that, I'll have $2. And I believe it, and it's true, and I'll show you, and it works like this. End of quote. And Frank says, and they're on that level, and they're tenacious, man. They hold right on to it. And they have built a country, an ugly fucking country. And here it is. They did it with their own minds, the size of raisins. And that's the end of the Bowert Zappa interview. Yeah. What? Oh, you said wow. That's pretty impressive, Frank.
What year was that?
March 67. Okay, I have to unmute people. Where are they?
All participants are now unmuted.
Damn, Bob. Damn.
So that's pretty harsh, what he's saying.
Pretty honest.
Yeah.
But he's always funny, like saying the system is your parent with other uniform.
Yeah. Now, Walter told me, after the interview, Zappa looked around the office, and he looked at Walter, and Walter was a pretty cool guy back then, and he looks and says, are you guys CIA? Right, ass forward. And Walter never got over that. He loved telling that story. Unfortunately, he didn't, you know, stay in touch with Zappa. He should have. But, you know, Bowert doesn't ask very long questions. What about this? What about that? You know? So it might have looked a bit cold to Frank. So what's the next part? What? We have to get some theories out of this. Fill up airtime.
He also mentions there that he saw himself as a therapy.
Yes, there, he is talking about therapy. Now, here's a long interview, and I don't think I read much of it. So, I mean, you could go online and read these interviews, so maybe it's redundant to read them, but I'm interested in our comments about them. You know, anybody can read it, and then they just keep it to themselves, but we have to come up with interesting interpretations. So we're Frank is being a doctor. He's Dr. Zircon. He wants to change the structure of America. He's part libertarian, part socialist, part anarchist, part monarchist. He's quadriphenic, ready and able to do anything that comes up. He's from Italy.
An entrepreneur.
What?
He's capitalist.
Capitalist, yeah.
He's trying to sell his product.
Yes, but he's also saying... He wants what?
To assist the younger generations.
Right. And I wonder if it's valid what he's saying, that the kids could run the country. Were they actually that big a part of the economy? You know, McLuhan has a New Yorker cartoon in The Medium is Besides where these two men, businessmen, are looking at these younger kids with their long hair and stuff, and one guy goes, yeah, and the problem, one guy says, yeah, and the problem is they provide $30 billion in our economy. They're looking at them saying, well, we can't touch them. they're such a big factor in our economy.
Bob, did he say at the beginning of the article that he wanted to be a candidate? Was he the beginning?
Oh, yes. I've read that is in one of the articles, but I haven't come across it. So let me just check. Is it in the Lisa Williams? Yeah, the first question back in December 66. Do you see a political solution to what has been happening on the Strip? What I would like to propose, he says, is another party. We have the Republican and Democratic parties. I would like to propose the Interested Party. Posters, pins, a platform that was a little more logical than two chickens in every pot. These might draw some kind of popular support from people who are interested. A platform that stood for reevaluation of everything in the light of, in terms of, the Constitution as it stands, not as it has been diluted. Okay, and temper that with certain advancements in modern technology and certain advancements in sociological fields. Take into consideration where we're really at in terms of the sexual revolution and just look at everything the way it actually is today and set it up all over again. That's your only chance to make it work. So there he's starting a political party. Okay?
Yeah. It's really hard to try to describe him. I mean, you could say he's radical, but a lot of the points are pretty valid. I mean, would you consider him quadriphenic?
Oh, yeah, he's quadriphenic, but he never explained it that way. One night I was in his studio, and the young guy, Bob Stone, who's a pretty good engineer, he was, follower Frank, and he was telling me the problem is that people aren't rational. And I knew he got that from Frank, that they thought Frank was in a particular position, that there's too much irrationality going around. And he wasn't going to try to understand it in McLuhan terms, but that's what they believed. The people around Frank was to be tolerant, rational, and use reason. So they're very old-fashioned that way. That's actually a literate bias from the 18th century.
Hey, Bob, I thought it was interesting how he was very, he wasn't very respectful of the kids who were protesting the war by carrying signs saying we want peace and was actually ridiculing them saying that's totally ineffective and then later on says that the kids could run the world or they could, but then he really wouldn't want them to. So, and then it's interesting to note that those same kids are the ones that are running the world now. They're the ones that grew up to be the establishment that we have now.
Right. Yep. The establishment always has the same content. user is the content. So
this certainly the numbers were there to run it, but I don't think the mentality was.
Right. Well, he said he didn't want. He's telling that they could take it over, but he's not supporting them unless they do their homework.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not qualified mm-hmm. to run it. They could, but it wouldn't matter.
Well, he called them irrational.
Yeah. Did you see note the power of Zappa, you know, playing his music?
Yes, but I think unless you reset and you are in your power and your cells are again perfect and all this, you are in like this rabbit hole of cocaine decisions and I think in this situation there won't be any change really.
No.
The change had to be really at that level to.
Yeah, really you're on your own, and if you're lucky, you find out about us, and then you have fun. That's the secret. You have good medicine, whatever you want to call what we offer.
Yes, because whenever everybody's in their power, there is no more politics.
Yeah.
I mean, there is just this xenocracy thing, this strange democracy or something. What would you imagine it will be like? Everybody in the power.
You mean
if
when we take over?
Right.
It'll be just like it is today, but there'll be a lot of happy people you won't even know about. They ain't telling anybody. But they'll all have radio shows, and they'll be always trying to imitate my record collection. They'll all be clones trying to redo Bob.
A bunch of freaks.
Yeah. A bunch of kooks. And, of course, they'll try to rip each other off and steal each other's products and claim that they're doing it and the other guy's an asshole. And just like it always is.
Is that because of human nature? Is that why you say that?
No, it's because we're going to redo it as actors. It'll be all faked.
Oh.
We'll be fallen as an art form.
It's like a play, like an entertainment.
A play, yeah.
It's like Zappa performing. Everybody has to sing.
Right. And, you know, people get up and say, you know, I knew a guy, 93 years old, and he had the best DJ, and the government paid no attention to him. And then one day they decided to give him a trophy. So they invited Washington to give him the trophy, and they shot him. But then he still showed up on his radio show 3 days later.
But that would be Bob's world, and it's our choice to participate. We could create our own world.
That's right. You'll be doing your world. But what were we talking about just before? What were we going to do? Oh, yeah, I was going to read something. Why didn't I start reading it? Why do we have this interruption?
You said wait.
I said wait?
You made a segue. Yes.
Okay, so this, I think we got some stuff here that we haven't heard before. So this is in Hit Parader magazine, June 1967. So the article written by Don Paulson. He says, the most amazing, outrageous, and ambitious rock and roll group anywhere in the universe is the Mothers. I remember reading a bit of this last week. Their music, best appreciated in person, combines today's pop sounds with symphonic music, satire, the primitive rock and roll songs of the 1950s, and social commentary. And you can even dance to it. The others were organized by Frank Zappa, an ex-advertising man who had been writing songs since he was 14 and had experimented with abstract music. Using motivational research principles, Frank created a group unlike anything the world had ever seen. For one thing, they weren't seeking a hit record. Then they quote Frank, "Our aim is to kill top 40 radio. Certain concessions must be made before a record is playable on the air. I'm not in the business to compete with the makers of Hanky Panky. That record can be played because it won't hurt anybody. It won't move them either. I'm not writing music like that. I'm a composer, and nobody wanted to hear my music, so I organized the Mothers and did the Freakout album. Now people are listening. Sometimes they wonder what they're hearing and why it sounds like that, but sometimes they like it. Top 40 radio is unethical, unmusical, and it stinks. Classical music stations aren't much better. They all have very rigid, limited programming." The Mothers, another important statement, the Mothers were created to fill most of the gap that exists between so-called serious music and the mass public. Really good music with advanced tendencies has been kept from the public at large. This includes classical and popular music. A filtering system of little old ladies selects the music played by symphony orchestras and on radio stations. Once some people get to the position where they own a nightclub or control the goings-on in a concert hall, they become critics and tastemakers. Once some people get to the position where they own a nightclub or control the goings-on in a concert hall, they become critics and tastemakers. Usually they hate music. They love business and just want to make money. Whenever I have to deal with this kind of people, I always tell them that I hate music and I'm only doing this for the money. See? He's practical. They slap me on the back and we get along fine. I tell them I wish I could drive a cab instead, but I can't get a license. Yeah, I tell them I hate music. They probably think that his music is horrible and that you would have to hate music to make music like Frank does. So he actually knows that the people that he has to do business with won't understand his music, and he can get away saying that he hates music, because to them, it sounds like he hates music. So he says, the public knows nothing of what's really going on in the outer limits of music. There are kids writing music who think they've just made up the most fantastic things. They don't know that the best they can write today was already written and performed in 1912. A piece like Amerique's by Edgar Varese, written in 1912, would scare the average teenager to death. Really scare him. Varese lived and died in New York. The average American doesn't even know he existed, yet what he wrote has virtually changed the shape of all the music of the other composers who have heard it. One of the composers it affected was Frank Zappa. After convincing some rhythm and blues musicians he knew to become the Mothers and embark on a new musical venture, Frank and his friends starved for 10 months. But gradually people came to see the weird new group that insulted the audience and did songs no one had ever heard before. While playing at the Whiskey A Go-Go in Hollywood, the Mothers caught the ear of MGM record producer Tom Wilson. He heard them do their Watts Riot song, told them he'd record it, and left 5 minutes later, thinking they were just another rhythm and blues group. At their first recording session, Tom found out what else the Mothers had in the repertoire and decided to do an album. Frank came up with some arrangements, and the 17-piece orchestra was added to the five main Mothers. Most rock and roll albums cost around $5,000 to record. Freakout cost $21,000. It was released as a two-record set, selling for the price of one. The word spread through the underground, and the album turned up on the bestseller charts. Not many groups can have a hit album without getting a hit single first, but Frank put his knowledge of motivational research into the album cover. This is the kind of article that someone who heard us do the Library of Congress stuff, they'd say, yeah, Frank planned this. He was a clever, what do they call him? Trying to find where what they didn't I just say that they he was something. No. $21,000. Oh, yeah, Frank put his knowledge of motivational research into the album cover. Quote, the Freakout album was distilled and packaged very purposefully to sell on site. Like, when in the history of teenage music has an unknown group come out with a two-record package that looked like that? Asked Frank. The packaging was designed to say, hey, look at this freaky piece of trash. Two records for only $3.12. Then he says, quote, the Susie Cream Cheese line was a carefully planned hype. It has little or no meaning on any level. People can make it as bland or as nasty as they like. Girls come up to us and say, I'm Susie Cream Cheese. And I say, I know you are, but really it doesn't mean anything. The success of Freakout enabled Frank to carry out the next step in his carefully plotted musical master plan. Quote, our second album called Absolutely Free is not exactly rock and roll. It's an oratorio. Each member of the group sings a character part. There are about 8 songs added together in a continuous piece of music presenting a panorama of life in America today. A complete libretto is enclosed. Quote, Frank says, there's a section about 10 minutes long about a man in a city hall who has a fetish about 13-year-old girls covered in chocolate syrup. The result of this is that he makes bad laws. There's also a song about vegetables. People don't talk to vegetables enough, Frank says. The packaging is more tasteful. Frank says it's closer to what the music is really like. The cover resembles a movie soundtrack album, sort of. What could Frank do for an encore? Says the journalist. He told us he wants to stage a Broadway musical science fiction horror story based on the Lenny Bruce trials. He'd also like to conduct an 84-piece rock and roll orchestra on the stage of Carnegie Hall and hypnotize the audience with his music. If anyone can do all those things, it's Frank Zappa. So isn't that a wonderful article? Oh, yeah, I got to unplug you guys.
All participants are now unmuted.
You're free to talk. Free to move us into unbounded, unfiltered areas of scintillating conversation. Go. Put your mouth to the mic.
Put your mouth to the sax. Blowing up.
Put your hand on the mat and light. Yes.
Okay. I was wondering, as I was thinking about this whole thing about this, what the new world and this new environment is like, is to me it sounds like a economy contextually that's built on life and not on death. I mean, it's a huge contextual shift to build economies and worlds and everything based on the principle of eternal life versus, you know, death and taxes.
Oh, someone burped.
Is that accurate? Do you see that that's what's occurring?
You said something about death and taxes? I didn't get that part.
Okay, hold on. Sorry. Okay, contextually, a new world, a new environment, a new economy. I mean, it was talking about, you know, I was listening to the part about saying, you know, could the kids run the world type of a thing, and the issue about their role in the economy. Well, the Bolsheviks and all these people always trying to control the military economy, and military economy is strictly based on death and domination and authority. Okay, so now here comes this radical shift with ION, which would, and ION's the anecdote to that, and the anecdote to death is life. And so now you have a world and worlds being created strictly on the premise of life.
Yeah. That's us?
So that's us. That's the shift. And that would be our experience in the new, like you, somebody said, Bob, what do you think that's going to be like? You were talking about everybody having their own radio show and competing with products and saying that they came up with something or whatever. But I mean, to me, contextually, the shift is to life. All economies, all technologies are life supporting and life extending, not life terminating, like the military.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, do you think that's an accurate assessment of ION?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Life affirming.
All right. Life affirming, life is extending, and all the economies. I mean, think about what, you know, like the RNA drops and cold fusion and, you know, other things would all be surrounded around, all, you know,
yeah.
Life giving. Yeah. Okay, very good. I just wanted to check in. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, we got to come up with some more ideas. What do we? So we've decided that Frank, we've pretty well beat the horse to death about what he was and how he was a one-man army or one-man political partner, political party. Pardon me? Anybody demur?
Yes, and the thing is, people thought he was just making weird music, but other people like you could see that he was much more than that.
Yeah. And we liked his music.
Yes, it's the perfect soundtrack to McLuhan and Joyce.
Yeah,
and Bob,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah. Here, okay, so this Hit Parader article, we were going to do that, July 1967. It says, in the March Hit Parader, Eric Burdon, you know, of the Animals, Eric Burdon told a British reporter about the way out people he had met on his last American tour. Quote, before returning to Britain, I recorded some material with Frank Zappa, the leader of the Mother's Invention, who is regarded as the leading light on the freakout scene in America. Unquote, said Eric. Then he said, Zappa is a very interesting character, about 28 years old. He makes these weird movies and puts the soundtracks on them himself. He showed me one of a guy picking spots on his leg and another with the sequence taken by an infrared camera of a guy necking with his typical Hollywood blonde, all lipsticky and high-heely. It's not meant to be entertaining so much as effective, and that it is. When we showed the article to lead mother, Frank Zappa, he exclaimed, quote, gads, spots on his leg? Oh, no. There's a guy just had a motorcycle accident. I got a picture. He had scabs on his legs, and he was squeezing them. Unquote. Frank also explained that Eric had his age wrong. Frank is really only 25. That's not true unless, no, it's going into 67. He's 22. So, continuing the article, after discussing the mother's music at length, we got back to the encounter between Frank and the Animals in Los Angeles. Here now is a true story with more action, suspense, and laughter than Abbott and Costello meets Frankenstein, Hercules meets Dr. Zhivago, and the Bobbsey twins meet Fanny Hill. Take it away, Frank Zappa. So he says, on July 4th, 1966, and what you might describe as a moment's notice, I was asked to manufacture, on behalf of Tom Wilson, for the Animals, a musical organization from England, a set of arrangements. I was told, just go in there, tell the musicians what you want, and they'll play it. So then Frank says, I get to the studio at 11 o'clock. I'm the only one there. Then Tom Wilson comes in. He asks, quote, where are the Animals, unquote. I say, gee, I don't know, Tom. I had called the musicians' union and had brought down a girl who plays the bass and 12-string guitar, who's a monster named Carol Kay. She's a member of the Wrecking Crew. Remember that name, Carol Kay? I had called the musicians' union and brought down a girl who plays the bass and 12-string guitar, who's a monster named Carol Kay. He's really good, one of the top studio players in L.A. Also, Don Randy on piano, Johnny Guerin on drums. I was playing guitar on one tune and the bass on the other side of this life. And I had a guy on harmonica, the guy who originally wrote Hey Joe. Eric shows up with his drummer around 1:30 or so because they had been to a monster party the night before, and they'd been out being spectacular celebrities, having a wonderful time in show business all over town and paying very little attention to minding the store. They come walking in, and everyone starts playing demos for them because they didn't even know what they were going to record. Meanwhile, we all have these union people sitting around at triple time because it was a holiday. They were waiting to find out what to do. Finally, they decide what they're going to cut. We make two tracks with the union guys, and then the animals themselves show up around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and they run through... And they run through four or five old R&B songs like Long Tall Sally and Hit the Road Jack. The two songs the Union Cats played sounded pretty tight. They sounded better than the Animals. Different. It was a different mix. Then Zappa says, after we did the session, I started talking with Eric Burden. Showbiz is wonderful, said Frank. Yes, sir, Frank. Yes, it is, Eric. So showbiz is wonderful, says Frank. What's his name? Who are we talking about? Yes, sir, Frank. Eric. Oh, yeah, Eric Burden. Yes, sir, Frank. And then Frank says, yes, it is, Eric. Anyway, they came over to my house that night. I had never entertained anybody at my new house. I live with about 6 people. They entertained me, but I had never had any groups over. One of the guys who had been coming over was Ray Elliott, the organ player from Them. He was a really groovy cat. I really dug him, but he'd get blotto and fall all over the furniture and just make a disaster. The Animals were there, just sitting around in the dimly lit room, getting wasted and having merry fun and grabbing girls as they walked by. Meanwhile, Eric is going through my collection of R&B records and going out of his mind with joy. Quote, here, the original record of, oh no, wow. And we played some of them. Then I set up my projector and screen and proceeded to show them my home movies of an experimental nature, accompanying the movies with a collection of electronic music. Everybody sat there looking at the spots on the leg, not knowing how to take it. Some of them got very paranoid and wanted to leave. It made them very tense. Eric Burden, though, dug it. He stayed until 4 o'clock in the morning. Then he split. Then, without notice, they all come back the next night and proceed to almost demolish my house. In the middle of that, Roy Elliott of Them comes walking in, and he really did demolish my house. We wheeled him out and put him in a cab. I didn't know that it had affected Eric that much until I started reading all these things he said in the Hit Parader article. I must have really blown his mind, haha. So, any thoughts by anybody?
Come on, anybody.
Yes, somebody contribute.
did Zappa abandon his desire to be president, or was that always not serious?
No, he was serious, and he started running in 91, and then he had to face up to the fact he had cancer, so he stopped.
Oh, he stopped because he had got cancer?
Yeah. Well, that didn't help. He couldn't function doing that, the road trips.
He seemed like he had such a handle on the mental status of the people. Did he really think he could win the presidency, being so honest, you know, about the status quo? I mean, about what this country really stood for, like his speeches. It seemed I don't know how he thought he could actually become president, saying the things he said.
I'm here. So what did he say?
Well, I mean, just like, you know, from the beginning, they came over and wiped out the Indians and the culture and, you know, just being very honest about everything that this country really stood for. And
be humble, Frank.
Yes. People just don't talk like that and expect to become president.
Oh, I see.
And
is this,
that George, Washington was a pedophile?
Yeah.
Right. Is Leslie? This is Leslie talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, they don't. But Frank talks like that in about issues today. I mean, he would have talked. He did until he died. He didn't talk exactly like that. I think he measured what he did later with depending on who the medium was, what the organ was. But there's my interview, which is pretty straightforward and serious. But then there's these other guys that went up to Frank's house and they tried to beat my interview. And they have a rather silly interview or a lot of trivial stuff. And Frank talked to them that way because that's the way they were. So I think Frank would have adapted to what was required as a president, to be a president. You know what I mean? He wouldn't be talking about what you were projecting on him from the past.
Mm-hmm. It just seems so honest about everything.
Well, he's not totally honest. He keeps things away from the public. Now, you had to read Barry Miles' book. Barry Miles, who was a longtime journalist friend of Zappa, he was like one of the first to appreciate Frank. He did good interviews. He's written this book that shows all the warts in Frank. And apparently, I think he was vengeful. It was some problem Miles had with Frank. But it's incredible what he lists. He goes through everything that we know Frank did, and then he shows the bad side effects of it in different ways. That's a test of your integrity there, Leslie. Can you handle it? Your hero is a doofus.
Yeah, I can handle it. But he was refreshing to me because hardly anyone really spoke truth to power back then like he did. I mean, now we see more people doing it. But, yeah.
Yeah, no, and he did it.
Yes, he really did, and on so many levels, you know, like someone was saying about the protesters, he told this one girl, you'd be a lot better off sleeping with the guy you're protesting again. You'll probably affect more change that way.
Where did you find that? Because I was looking for that interview. I can't find it. He called it suck power.
This is the same. I don't know where I was that I ran into these just interview after interview. I got it from you guys because the second I got home, I got on Ion and Bob, or I got on Achieve Radio. I forgot which one I went on to. See, usually August does all this for me. He has everything downloaded before I wake up, but he wasn't here, so I just was up to my own devices, and somehow I found it somewhere, and it was just, gosh, where am I? I'm trying to find it now.
You've already said all that. You repeated yourself.
Right. So I know, but what I'm trying to say is I don't know how to tell you where to find this interview, and just one after another for hours. And he said that.
Well, can you look in your history? Can you look in your history?
History. Let's see. Okay, so what would you want me to tell you? Like the www.youtube.com? That's what it says when I come up to it. Shoot, maybe I can. Oh, see, I'm not very. My chip body isn't very good, Mom. I'm sorry. But it's really an awesome thing. It's got 40 something different interviews. Some are 7 minutes, some are an hour, some are 2 minutes, some are 9 minutes, and just on and on and on. It just kept going and going and going. So I don't know really how to tell you how to get there, but it had so much.
Well, what's your history say?
Well, my history. Okay, so my original history. Get back to when I first. It was Wednesday. So it's all the different ones. It just comes up, Flo and Eddie, Frank Zappa, Late Night Special YouTube. Each one comes up separately. But when I was listening to them, they just rolled. I didn't have to do anything. And it's all YouTubes. I'm sorry.
Did I fall asleep? I didn't read. I'm reading the Eric thing. I didn't finish it. What the hell happened to me? Like then I set up my projector and screen and proceeded to show them my home movies. Proceeded to show them my home movies of an experimental nature, accompanying the movies with a collection of electronic music. Everybody sat there looking at the spots on the leg, not knowing how to take it. Some of them got very paranoid and wanted to leave. It made them very tense. I remember that. Eric dug it. He stayed till 4 o'clock in the morning. Then he split. Yeah, and they demolished his place. I read that. Put him in a cab. I didn't know that it had affected Eric that much until I started reading all these things he said in the Hit Parader article. It must have really blown his mind. Ha ha. Oh, I had not read that last line. Okay, sorry, I'm back here. Now, to go to YouTube and see if we can find the Flo and Eddie interview.
This one was 1989. Flo and Eddie talked to Frank Zappa in 1989. Tom Tiddler won. That's what it says right underneath it.
I've heard of him. What, Carol? No, I'm here typing. Flo and Eddie talked to Frank Zappa. I've never seen that. 19 minutes. I have to look at that.
Yeah, that's it.
So that would, but it's part of a whole bunch of them. Not in this case,
Darn, too bad. Yeah, there's one about him talking about John and Yoko stealing his music.
Yes, yeah.
There's a Captain Beefheart full documentary, which was pretty good. I didn't really realize that they were kind of antagonistic to each other at. Yeah, they had different opinions.
Point. Different
yeah.
time. When I visited Don and Ben Lohman in 1971, he was mad at Frank, and he went on about Frank is not an artist. He's just a good engineer, a good editor, so he tried to play down. But then he ran out of money, he was forced to work for Frank, so he was on the media 4 years later saying that Frank was the most creative person on the planet.
Yeah, he actually lived, when he died, he lived in a little town called Trinidad, and my land partner lives there, and he owned the only store in town, and he said Don came in all the time. He was quite a character, even up to his last dying day. So,
who said this?
My land partner, I have 60 acres, and I have a land partner that owns it with me, and he lives in Trinidad. He comes here.
Right. Are you saying L-A-M-B or L-A-N-D?
L-A-N-D, land partner.
Oh, okay, land partner.
Yeah, and okay, he lives okay, in Trinidad, so. And he owned the only store in town, so Don had, you know, everybody went into this store, and
right.
he talked to him a lot.
And he doesn't have it. You should have a bunch of stories to tell us, but you don't. Why don't you talk to your land partner and get him, sit him down, tape him, and see if he can tell a few stories about Don.
Oh, okay. I'll ask him some stuff, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
Should get him to phone in. Tell everybody to phone in. I talk about you guys constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What'd you
okay.
What'd you say? You talk about us constantly to him?
Yes. Yeah, to everybody. people go, they roll my, their eyes at me because I just can't stop talking about Bob.
Well, how do you describe us?
Oh, well, one thing I say about you is that, yeah, I've been studying this stuff. I have been studying ascension for my whole life, it seems like. And I'm so happy to find you because you call yourself the completement of it all, and maybe you are. But, you know,
no, but how do you say it to them? I want to hear how you go, this is God.
I say to them.
He lives in, lives in paradise, and he knows all about ascension. And he invented the oracle. No, let's hear how you say it.
Well, I just talk to people about some of your...
No, you got to do it. I'm that person. Talk to me about Bob.
Well, there's this radio show we listen to, and the guy's name's Bob, and he has a guy named Ion, who is the non-physical, and they just talk a lot about ascension, and oh gosh, I can't really, you know.
Come on, you're doing okay. It's childish, but it's okay.
Well, there's specific things I talk about sometimes, like not trying to understand things so much, overlay, you know, your concepts, and people really actually love that. And I said, you know, it's not a thinking man's game, you know, get your head out of it, you're overthinking things, and just all the stuff you guys say, and all the stuff I have said over the years, It's fair. Oh, and then the portal stuff because, you know, not all the anomalies that happen around me and, you know, the fruit disappearing and just the smoke disappearing and just all the stuff you guys talk about. I can't.
You just parrot it back to other people.
It dominates my whole thinking process. If I know it's not a thinking man's game here.
But we can't get Augustin to call in. He'll never call in.
Well, he may and he may not. I don't have much control over him. But he's the one who tells me that you are like a university course and that he doesn't say you should. He wouldn't say the words like that. But he said you could study this as if it was you were in college, and you could take more time to read all the McLuhan and all the stuff that's out there. And you know, and he knows a lot more about you guys than me.
Yeah, you knew the comfy street version.
Yep. I take the easy road.
He doesn't have anybody to talk to about it, the way he talks about it.
I wonder, yeah. He does talk to people about it, but not. He doesn't have time for people who don't want to listen to the Bob Show on Saturday night. He doesn't like it when people come over. He puts his headphones on and just scowls at us if we're too loud.
Okay, well, we got to get some ideas here.
Okay.
Okay, so Bert, are you still here, Bert? Did Bert go home? He usually leaves a message.
Maybe he just dropped out.
Yes, maybe he's on, I haven't checked. No, it's, let me check the green room. Yep. A while ago he said, I'm cutting out now for dinner prep. Catch you next week. Thanks for everything. And then Jean says Michael Brown might have just posted. Well, I guess we'll go over and see what they say on the chat line. Michael. Oh, yeah, I guess it is. He goes, just tuned in after a few years away, and Bob is still chatting. Ginny is still commenting. Zap is still playing. You! What does that mean? Zap is still playing you. Bob, you appear to have discovered permanently. Permanency. Big love to you all. Okay, I'm going again. See you in another couple of years. Well, he missed everything. He missed everything, and that's not a fair judgment of what's going on. Ginny's hardly on. There's other people who talk here. He missed what's going on. And what? Zappa's...